What up? It's UFC 213. It's TMP 207. We're live in Las Vegas, and this is a very special episode. Usually when we record these, I'm in Florida, P-Money's in Cali. We're roughly 2,000 miles away talking MMA. Right now, we're about 2 feet away from each other. We're both here live in Las Vegas, live at the MGM. Just watched a little tough finale action. Getting ready for some UFC 213 action. We're both going to be live in the building tomorrow. About to drop this podcast late Friday night tonight. P-Money, what's going on, brother?
Oh, Jake, well, you spelled it out. We're over here hanging out in the MGM Grand, got the suite popping off, strip overlooking.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful situation. And we just had a very nice card with the Tough 25 finale. There were stories of redemption and stories of violence. And we've got a whole lot more to look forward to tomorrow as well.
Yeah, I was kind of bumming on it for a second there just because we had so many decisions after decision. But it ended with a bang. It ended with what everyone's calling the round of the year, Gaethje Johnson. Super, super fun time. Yeah, we got Pat flipping a chair over a bed here so he can scoot up a little bit closer. Pat noticed on the screen that the sound waves he was making weren't quite as big as mine. So like a boss, he judo fucking threw this giant-ass chair over the mattress, about to pop a squat here. Yeah, I guess, shoot, we're here live in Vegas. Before we get to International Fight Week and all, the card we just watched and UFC 213, which, they recently made certain things legal in Nevada, so pardon the cough here and there. But, I do want to talk for a second, pardon me, about Kevin Lee and Michael Chiesa, because we did miss this past week, mainly because your boy has been in Texas on a family reunion. I didn't only not have internet, I didn't even have 4G, I didn't even have 3G. I was on spotty 1X. You know, if your phone says 1X, you're in the fucking boonies. barely getting any service in Texas, seeing family. I love them. They live in the middle of nowhere, but it also equated to not being able to pod. But yeah, Kevin Lee, Michael Chiesa, I guess really the only thing you take from there is that stoppage. Michael Chiesa bemoaning it as an early stop, as Kevin Lee really was sinking in that choke. I think most would agree it was an early stoppage. I think the ref was, what, Eve Levine or something, who doesn't really exactly have the best track record.
Mario
Yamasaki. Okay, yes. Yeah. I remember it as being a ref who didn't have a great track record there. But, what did you make of that stoppage, that fight? Kevin Lee, I believe, was the underdog there. And obviously, looked good winning the fight. Not many folks have wins over Michael Chiesa. B, calling out Khabib Nurmagomedov, which is surprising, just because it seems like no one wants anything to do with that guy. What did you think of the fight?
You know, it was a good fight for as long as it lasted. It was a very interesting round. I do think it was cut short a little prematurely by Mario Yamasaki and his intervention towards the later end of the round. It certainly looked bad for Michael Chiesa. He had Kevin Lee on his back, and he was getting beat up on. The choke was being applied, and Kevin Lee was really working on it, and it certainly appeared to be very tight under the neck. And Michael Chiesa did not appear to be defending it as well as he had been previously, was not as active with his defense.
It looked pretty deep.
It looked deep, and he didn't look to be doing much to get out of it. Be that as it may, he did not give any multiple concurrent taps. There was no verbal tap. He, to my eyes, did not appear to lose consciousness. I've seen some people say, oh, you know, his leg went limp or something like that. I don't quite know. I mean, people see different things, I guess. I have watched that replay a couple times. All I know is that certainly, and when these referees make their decisions, you know, again, this isn't something that they can review on DVR or do the instant replay, unless it's in a state where that is sanctioned. But even then, we've never seen instant replay instituted in a mixed martial arts match. It's kind of a hard thing to do. These are split decision judgments that are just made, and typically, you know, are irreversible in the hands.
Difficult sport to ref, for sure.
Difficult sport to ref. And, you know, my at the moment, as I was watching it live, I said, what the fuck is Mario Yamasaki doing? There was no tap. There was no verbal. I didn't see him go out. It looked like he was close, but he wasn't out. It certainly looked like it was going that way. Kevin Lee had plenty of time. But it's very rare that you ever see a submission being applied and a fighter not tap either verbally or physically and not lose consciousness and the fight gets called off. And typically every single time that does happen, everybody cries bullshit. But I've actually been very surprised with what seems to be a pretty large group of people online that just seem to think, or just a large percentage, not a group of people, just a large percentage of people that seem to be defended, like, ah, oh, well, you know what, oh, this fight was, you know, going one way, blah, blah, blah. You can never say that in MMA. We talk about it every single day, every single podcast we do, and almost every single time you watch a card, there's an example of why you should never count someone out in such a position. It was a bad fucking call. Mario Yamasaki's a fucking hack. And, you know, some of the people that really defend that stoppage in any kind of way.
The one knock I really have on MMA, it seems like it is almost impossible to lose your job unless you're growing weed, like fucking our boy Josh Rosenthal. Because you can be noted as a bad ref. I mean, like I just said, Eve Levine and Mario Yamasaki do not have good reps. But, like, what would it take? Because they've fucked up a lot of fights. And am I saying that they're bad people? No, it's awesome that they got into reffing. But just like any other job, if you constantly are questioned and constantly aren't performing up to your standard, there are other people. There are good refs out there.
If you tarnish the brand you're representing constantly.
And it goes the same with judges. There are judges who are known for having terrible decisions. You had Adelaide Byrd, who through a stretch of boxing fights, everyone basically assumed that she was taking money from the mob, because it's not the mob, but I don't want to get shot here, that we are
no,
the
no, MGMA.
Not the mob, wink, wink.
Somebody.
She was, if you're not familiar with the story of Adelaide Byrd, she has judged a number of MMA fights, and especially over the span of two boxing fights, the first one being Pacquiao Bradley, the second one doesn't pop in my head immediately, but she just came up with the most ridiculous of scores. And if you watched Bradley Pacquiao, the only way you can justify the score that LA Bird churned out is that there are prop bets with fights, and you can bet that X fighter wins by unanimous decision, which, if he is a huge favorite, would happen, or a split decision. Split decisions don't happen a lot, but if you have one judge who's taken a little payoff and is going to score it retarded, and you know it's going to be a split decision, even though one guy has the... I'm going off on a tangent as usual here. But to get back to Gaeth G. Johnson, I don't think fuckery wasn't... Or Gaeth G. Johnson, I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Lee Chiesa. It was a shitty stoppage. Was fuckery afoot? No. It was just bad refereeing. It is a shame that referees aren't more accountable for shitty things happening. You know, I feel like refs in every other sport, you know, they're held to a higher standard than MMA refs and MMA judges who are known to be bad. Do they lose their job? No, they just have a bad rep. That said, I think Kevin Lee was really dominating the fight. I think given the point where the fight was at, where the fight was stopped, I think if you don't stop it and you play that fight forward, I was fairly certain that Lee was going to win anyway, so I'm not that mad about it. Yeah, it sucks for Chiesa because it was a BS stoppage. But if Chiesa, like, if you're being real, Kevin Lee was dominating the end of that fight. If it would have gone all the way to the judges, Lee likely would have won. Chiesa likely needed a finish to win the fight. And the way that Lee was fighting, he didn't really look like he was putting himself out there to be finished. So, yes, it was BS, but am I going to lose any sleep over it? No, not at all. I guess that's all I got from that card. Really, in the MMA news, I'm sure we can catch up on any biggies. You have anything else?
Do you think that that should stand as a victory for Kevin Lee on his official mixed martial arts record?
100%. 100%. I mean, there are tons of early stoppages. There's tons of late stoppages. I mean, when you really get into stuff like, well, a failed drug test, is that a win or a loss? Oh, like an illegal strike. I feel like that's when you get into territory where I don't want to give a guy a W. But like even with the early stoppage, I think was BS. Kevin Lee was winning the fuck out of that fight. He was going to win that fight no matter what happened. He deserves a win because he looked amazing. I mean, what for people saying, oh, this is BS, the one thing you're kind of discrediting was that, yeah, should that have been a stop? Maybe not. But Kevin Lee looked fucking amazing. Kevin Lee was on a track to defeat Michael Chiesa. Did Mike have, a chance to win still? Yes. But this looked like it was Lee's fight.
I mean, you know, I feel for myself, Michael Chiesa did drop Kevin Lee in the beginning of that first round. And really, it was only one round of a Schedule 5. So not even 20% of the fight had been concluded prior to the stoppage. So
Lee was mauling that dude toward the end of the fight.
It was certainly, it was going his way. Absolutely. It was going his way.
He would have needed some Pat Barry, Chick Congo, like, reversal skills, some Yushin Okami, Tim Boach type. Like, if Chiesa would have rallied back, it would have been crazy, which is why I'm not really that bummed that Lee gets the W.
Yeah. I mean, well, we see crazy all the time in mixed martial arts. We're going to talk about some crazy that we witnessed tonight.
Round of the year. Gaethje versus Johnson.
Wow.
God. Oh.
Should we start with the bottom, though?
Fully erect. Yeah, we should start with the bottom. What, huh? We should work our way to the top. Real quick, before we dive into the card we just watched, we're probably going to post this up on iTunes, so we are pretty fresh here, breaking down and recapping this tough finale. I just got to give a big shout-out to my boy for betting the parlay. My boy Pat here is humble, said it was all luck. Yo, this parlay of Gray Maynard and Dracar Close, it was not luck. This is a veteran bet. This is seeing that Gray Maynard is a big underdog against who? Taruto Ishihara? Who is he beating? Nobody? Why is he a big underdog? And, yeah, Mark Diakase, he will have, like, even with the loss, he is going to have a good UFC career. But he's facing a grinder. He's facing an undefeated grinder. Shades of Sage Northcutt versus Brian Barberena. Yeah, you might be good. Undefeated flashy. But don't go up against a grinder from the MMA lab. Those motherfuckers know how to fight. You got Bendo, who I really think is, like, I mean, he is a great, great fighter, but just hearing him coach, he's going to be like a great Greg Jackson. And you know, as time goes on, he's a great coach and really seems to be the anchor of the MMA lab out there. Having Bendo in your corner seems like a very valuable thing to have. And Klose, getting that win, getting that, what should have been a unanimous decision when, you know, the tension when the decision came through, because the first thing Buffer says is the, you know, Johnny Fuckface, whatever their first judge's name. So you know when Bruce starts to narrow down the judges, it's like, okay, this is a split. And this should not have been a split. So it's like, fuckery is afoot. Did one judge fuck it up or did two? Because I feel like, you know, you see robberies all the time. Just look at Diego Sanchez's fucking record. and the right guy won the fight. Closa won. Maynard won. Your boy turned a molehill into a mountain, so to speak, with that parlay. We eating good tonight here at the MGM Grand, son.
9-1. 9-1.
We got a strip view already. And if you think I'm lying, yo, just check the Twitter, at the MA Podcast. I will post up some pictures. Actually, the only other time I've stayed in Vegas was UFC 167 almost 4 years ago, and we didn't get a strip view room, and our view was like of a parking garage and just shit. But we actually have an awesome view here. I'll post up some pics. Enough bragging, though, about Pat winning mad parlays. Nah. And us here at the presidential suite. Wink, wink, at the MGM Grand.
Hate to ball on y'all.
Balling from Montreal. let's get into this tough finale. We'll start with the prelims. Let off Gray Maynard. Looking excellent. Looking like a... Like, he even said himself, the last time he was on top of a guy was when he fought Kenny Florian over a decade ago. Really incorporating his wrestling. You watch a post-fight interview with him, guy's salty. And a salty Gray Maynard. I would not want to be the next guy to fight him, as as lowly as his recent, you know, record might look. He looked inspired. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Maynard does, too. We were going to have Tisha Torres and Juliana Lima on the UFC Fight Pass prelims, but Jessica I and
Aspen Ladd,
pulled out today, being ill. Jessica I and Ladd, the fight canceled. I also saying that even though this fight was at 135, I will no longer be fighting at 35. She's going to move to 25. UFC is about to open up the women's flyweights, and Jessica I will be competing there once they do so. So Torres Lima bumped up to the prelims. Torres gets a second round rear naked choke, gets $50,000 for it. Tearful says a friend of hers just got like murdered this week or something. So thoughts to Tisha, the terrible tangerine, tiny, titular tornado Torres against Juliana Lima. And after that fight was just when we just got a shitload of decisions. Five straight decisions. CB Dolloway gets a one-side decision against Ed Herman, even though toward the end, Herman busted CB's eye open, bleeding all over the place. Pitbull or... whatever the fuck his name is.
The Doberman. Okay, the one guy in the UFC who's not nicknamed Pitbull.
The one dog name in the UFC. There's like eight Pitbulls, one Doberman.
Someone needs to be a Dalmatian.
Or like a Chihuahua or a Husky. I would be the Labrador because I'm loyal. You know, I can like... Yeah. Yeah. I like duck. I'm playful. I would be a yellow lab.
There you go.
I'd for sure be a yellow lab. Anyway.
I'd be a pit bull because I'm cute but kind of retarded.
P-Money the pit.
No, I'm sorry. That's not politically correct. I apologize.
Yeah, you can't be talking about pit bulls.
No, nobody likes pit bulls. Actually, that's why I'm like a pit bull as well. That's
Black Lives Matter. We also had James Krause getting a unanimous decision against Tom Colicchio. Krause landing, I believe it was this fight where Krause landed this crazy knee, and Esther Lynn got maybe the picture of the year. Pat, I don't know if you've seen it. I'm about to pull it up on my phone, actually. Esther Lynn, who I believe is the photographer with MMA Fighting, snapped this perfectly as Krause jumped up with a knee, landed square.
Esther's a wizard with the lens.
Here. Lynn's a wizard here, yeah. On Twitter, she is at all elbows. This was all knee. Look at just How amazing a fucking shot is this? Tom Colicchio's nose blood going everywhere as James Krause lands a perfectly placed knee. James Krause getting a deserved win. You gotta feel bad for Tom Colicchio. He lost quite a bit of blood. I feel like...
Tough dude.
As good a season this was of recent memory, one of the better seasons of Tough. I wish we would have gotten more Tough fights. I mean, there were a lot of storylines. And we got Taylor Lima. We got Krause Colicchio. Those were the only four people from the season who fought. Usually I feel like we see more than two fights. We see like maybe four or five.
Maybe even six or seven on a Tough finale. Maybe
six or seven. I would have loved... Depending on the
weight class or...
I mean, yeah, I would have loved to see Ramsey Nijem against Gilbert Smith. That was brewing toward the end there. We have, you know, former champs and Truck Gordon. I mean, there are a lot of guys from that season I would have liked to see on this card. And, you know, as much as the card was good, I like seeing Angie Overkill, Tisha, Maynard, Brad Tavares, Kent Cannoneer, Glosa Diakase was obviously fun. I don't want to take away from any of those fights, but I would have liked to see more Tough fights. That being said, what else happened on the prelims? Angie Overkill with the decision, and we may as well include... Johnson and Tavares winning decisions. Cannoneer broke it up with a TKO, saved the top three fights for their own discussion. But yeah, we got Maynard wins, Torres gets that rear naked choke, and then we got just a rash of decisions. I think I may have conked out for like 5 minutes when you stepped down for a quick smoke action. I was getting a little sleepy. Dolloway, Krause, Hill, Johnson, and Tavares, all winners by unanimous decision. Cannoneer broke it up by TKO. Nick Rorick really, he took the fight on short notice, was a big underdog. A
couple days notice.
And it showed, yeah. It showed. But props to the guy for staying in there until the third round.
The UFC debut at that. Not just a short notice on a couple days. UFC debut on a couple days.
Whew. But, what did you make of that gang of fights?
Oh, man, you know what? Well, I was certainly loving the card, really. I mean, it was getting to be a little bit of a long stretch there. I mean, when you do have five decisions in a row, the first... six of seven fights go to decision. It can just make for a longer card just for the fight time and everything like that. But realistically, first of all, much better than having to deal with the pacing issues of, you know, having to watch 2.5 hours of the same commercials over and over again. At least, you know, it was fight action. And really, every single one of the fights that went to a decision, at least for my eyes, was entertaining. Of course, when you're in Vegas, you got a couple bucks on the card that really makes things entertaining. And oh my goodness, one of my favorite comedians had once said, "You know how you make any sporting event interesting? If you have $800 in your bank account, bet $1,600 on the game, and you'll be very interested and very invested all of a sudden." But no, really, even cash aside, just as a fan watching live, Maynard over Ishihara, good fight. You know, if you're a Maynard fan, he was just all over him. Good, solid wrestling. Tisha Torres getting her first finish in the UFC. I want to say possibly even her first finish as a professional, but definitely her first UFC finish. Very great to see her do so well. Kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelim card. Dolloway over Herman, great back and forth there. Dolloway ended up, it was definitely a war of attrition by round 3. He was completely exhausted. Herman was completely exhausted. I think about 15 seconds in, Dolloway shot for one of the weakest looking. I mean, you know, seriously, no offense. I mean, but both these guys were just spent. He shot for this takedown. And it was like he just kind of grabbed Herman and just dragged him down. But these guys, man, they left it all out there. And, you know, that made all these decisions fun. Krause over Galicchio, a little more one-sided. Krause just really beat Galicchio up on the feet. Hill versus Yoder, a lot of great back and forth there. The Spider Monkey was all over Angela Hill, but Angela Hill was able to swat her off repeatedly and get a nice W in the UFC women's strawweight division. And yeah, on the main card, Jordan Johnson versus Marcel Fortuna, another great back and forth fight. 29-28 across the board for that one. Brad Tavares versus Elias Theodoro, fantastic fight, man. This fight, I was telling Jake, I would not be surprised myself if that fight went to a draw. I mean, really, I need to check out MMADecisions.com right now. Shout out to MMADecisions.com.
Shout out.
Being a nice aggregate if you're trying to check out.
Even though they didn't want to add the MMA podcast, shout out.
Come on now. I mean, well, to their defense, we don't actually have published weekly picks and or play-by-play.
We barely tweet during most fights, so.
Yeah, so, if, you know, anything, good call, good call. That's why we shut them out. It was a
good
out.
Call to not include us.
But be that as it may, I'd be interested to see, because I thought that one could be very much a draw, you know, one and two going a different way, and then round number three being a draw. I mean, it was just scrappy all the way from start to finish. And then, yeah, as we touched on a little bit, Jared Cannonier beating up Nick Roark. Nick Roark, you know, just very big light heavyweight. My goodness, I was very surprised he made the 205 limit. But he came in and, you know, props to him. My God, anybody stepping in to find the UFC on like a couple days notice, making their debut. And he held tough to the third round, wasn't going anywhere. I mean, he was still actually actively defending himself when Big John McCarthy waved it off. Although it was a fantastic stoppage. It really could have probably been stopped a few seconds earlier, you know, maybe even 20 to 30 seconds earlier. Roark was definitely hurt, and thank God for Big John McCarthy being the good referee that he is, and stepping in, knowing when a fighter is just too fucking tough for their own good, and stepping in, stopping the fight. But, you know, good show of himself for Roark, and a you know, great show for Cannonier. Being able to take on such a large and imposing light heavyweight, got past the reach of Roenick and Roark, I'm sorry.
And Jeremy Roenick.
Nick Roark. yeah, he was able to impose his game plan pretty much throughout the whole thing. And yeah, it was a very nice way to break up that decision streak, even though that it went into the third round. There was not even a first round decision, or not even a first round finish on this fight, or on this fight card, even when we got a finish. But man, no, solid scraps all the way up into the main card.
Yeah, and that brought us to those main three fights, which I guess we'll leave with that close fight. Close versus Diakase. That was obviously a 29-28 close. For sure won the first two rounds, Diakase winning the third one. And, man, like we mentioned before, the drama built up quite a bit when we heard it was a split decision. But the right guy won. And, you know, this is like I said, shades of Sage Northcutt versus Brian Barberena. You have this exciting guy who's finishing all these fights and everyone's getting crazy over against just a grinder who's going in there with a really good game plan and was also undefeated. Drakkar Klose, still yet to lose a fight, goes in there, gets a split decision win against the heavily favored Mark Diakase. Both of these guys will have good careers at 55. But it was Klose who, for his own sake, was showboating way too much. He had times where he could have gone in for the kill, and there were times where he probably shouldn't have been showboating, and he was dancing around like a fool. That aside, he gets a well-deserved win. Pat, I know if anyone was watching this fight closely, it was you. You know, the fight started, we had some foot stomp action, a lot. If you want to watch a fight where you really see a lot of the dynamics of the stand-up clinch, I feel like a lot of this fight was fought from the stand-up clinch position. Both guys had dominant spots. It really showed that if your back is against the cage, you're kind of fucked when it comes to the stand-up clinch. Both guys going back and forth. But like I said, it was Close, who ended up with the win. What did you make of it, P-Money?
Well, you know, touching back on the story you told a little earlier, having a parlay out there where Gray Maynard being a plus 260 underdog as the first fight of the card, and then having Drakkar Close being the last leg of my parlay on the third to last fight of the card, there was quite a bit of a suspense building up there. So as you mentioned, I certainly was watching this fight intently. I was watching fights of both of these guys early on just this morning before I placed these bets. I was really trying to get a feel for the line, get a feel for the guys, and you know, it kind of played out as I thought. I mean, obviously that 9-1 cash, but a lot of cage work, a lot of cage pressure, Jake, as you mentioned, and I felt a lot of that would come down to Close having the lower center of gravity just slightly, being able to maintain that. It was coming down to foot stomps there, but also different factors, as we'd mentioned before. I mean, having Benson Henderson in the MMA lab in his corner, he was employing those Henderson-esque super low leg kicks targeting the calf like area. It looked like he was almost going to get a TKO from leg kicks at the end of the first round, just chop the legs down completely. Was able to drop him again, chopping the legs in the second round. And yeah, as you mentioned, he did get a little more showboaty than I typically like seeing any fighter get. I mean, you don't want to be rolling around with your hands down, this, that, and the other, especially when your boy P-Money's got a grip of chips riding on it. I was biting my nails that whole damn time, but I mean, it was certainly a good show. Two undefeated prospects, lot of animosity going into that fight with the weigh-ins and everything like that, and it was a good fight. Again, maybe I was a little more invested in this one than others. Hand to God, though, I am pretty sure as I was walking into the sports book to place my bet, I had heard two other gentlemen talking about putting a bet on Drakkar Close as well. And I said, you know what?
Money!
I think we're all making a good decision today, fellas. And you know what? It turned out to be that way. It was a good fight. Oh my God, that should not have been a split decision. I was shitting myself at the end there when they started reading the two judges, or the different judges' names, but no, solid scrap between the two prospects. I definitely think, you know, they're both going to go far. Lots of raw talent there.
Lots of money being made here at the MGM Grand, bringing us, Close looking good, bringing us to... speaking of money, after waiting for 9 years, old JT Money looking good against Diego Lima.
What a segue.
What a segue. What a one-sided fight, too. I feel like Diego Lima had popped him for a second, seemed to have dropped him, tried to get on the back, got on way too high. The next thing you know, Taylor's got Lima's back, and that was really the only flash where it looked like Lima might win. The rest was all Jesse Taylor. 9 years after blowing it on Tough by kicking out the window of a fucking limo here at the valet of the MGM Grand. Looking like a boss, stepping in, winning Tough Redemption. Like I said, I wish we would have gotten more Tough fights. But Taylor the favorite. Taylor training with Matt Brown and the like over there. And just what a great story. I mean, this was the Tough redemption season. And as far as redemption goes, this may have been the greatest story that could have happened. Like, he had his chance a decade ago. He fucked himself up, worked his way slowly but surely back up the ranks. And it sounds like somebody is sawing away at our window here. We're at the MGM. Must just be some sort of air vent action, some sort of, I don't even know, but it sounds like there is a man with a saw outside our room. Yeah, this is a very strange thing. But we will continue.
When podcasts take a turn.
If we die, then this will be our... Yeah, this will probably be the last you ever hear of us. Wow, so we're probably going to die. Let's move... Or no, let's not move on. Let's talk to P-Money about Jesse Taylor and Diego Lima.
Well, and I go our imminent demise.
Well, I go investigate what the fuck is going on in the corner of our room.
Oh, my goodness. Well... You know, Taylor and Lima...
Is there a small mission?
As Jake had pointed out, it couldn't have been scripted better. There could not have been, for the Ultimate Fighter 25, redemption. For there to be a redemption season. Although Tough 4 was kind of a redemption season, if we're being realistic.
Was that the one back Sarah won?
That was the one that Matt Sarah won that bought him a shot at the title.
Too bad he didn't do anything with that title shot.
Oh wait. Yes, he did. Oh man, that was fantastic. No, but and you know what? As fantastic as that was, dang it. Could not have been scripted any better. Former Tough finalist back in Tough 7, I want to say, Jesse Taylor coming back, making the Tough finale again, this time not acting a fool, not wilding out, making it to the Octagon.
And no limos were hurt on this season.
No limos were hurt. Damn it. Being a good role model for his daughter, for the kids. Bless his heart. JT Money getting that Tough finale, big check, and getting that big W over Diego Lima. Truly just dominated the whole first round. It was a textbook ragdolling. At the opening of the second round, almost instantly, Diego Lima comes out, reached out and touched JT Money,
dropped him, touch me,
and you know, just made the mistake of trying to go to the ground. You know, he looked like maybe he was trying to capitalize with a submission of his own after dropping him, but that is not really where you want to be with Jesse Taylor. You don't want to play those games on the ground with JT Money. Damn it, if you have the ability, I mean, try those hands. Try those hands if you can. That's probably going to be your best bet. I wouldn't want to test either route. JT Money, again, gets that W. And that long-awaited redemption, almost a decade in the making, finally makes it happen. Pretty much everybody I know at the time who was watching The Ultimate Fighter, I mean, Jesse Taylor just looked like a lock. He was beasting through everybody back in the day. And really, he pretty much did the same on Tough 25 as well from start to finish. And this was one of the rare Toughs. I can't recall a season of The Ultimate Fighter that I've watched almost every single episode aside from Tough 25 in years. It had been quite some time. Probably, you know, Tough 15, which was the Tough Live season, but... they've been few and far between. I want to say even the strawweight, Road to the Championship, I don't think I watched a single fight, the one where they were trying to search for the competitor for Demetrius Johnson. And I don't know why that was. But anyways, long tangent done for myself. Great performance for JT Money. Redemption.
What a road this guy's been on. He did have one UFC fight back in 08, lost to CB Dolloway, which really shows CB Dolloway's been around for almost a decade. He's been around fucking forever. Even though it was one of Dolloway's first fights in the UFC. Since then, the guy's been on such a journey. He was 6-3 back then. Now he's 31-15. To just give you an idea, he's fought in Dream, Total Combat, XFC, Strikeforce, MFC, Impact, Battlefield, KSW, Cage Warriors, World Series of Fighting, Battlegrounds, just about every organization that exists. Finally gets his shot back in the UFC and beats Diego Lima via rear naked choke to become the Tough 25 champion. What a great story. I guess that brings us to the main event. Justin Gaethje, Michael Johnson. Man, too bad this was such a terrible fight. We have nothing to talk. Oh, wait, no. What the fuck did we just watch about an hour ago?
Yeah, I don't know. That was something. That was speaking of, you know, we're talking about it, and this is
Round of the year, easily.
Oh, round of the year.
And absolutely. If it wasn't so short, I would say fight of the year. But even still, fight of the year.
Hey, holy shit. That could easily, I mean, even for only being, I mean, almost 10 minutes. That's still not a bad chunk of fight time. I mean, my gosh, for 10 minutes and what these gentlemen put in over the 10 minutes. And this is why I was talking earlier about Lee Chiesa. You know,
yeah.
I mean, and again, you know, anybody.
You're who right listens, because Johnson was dominating the end of that first round.
He was dominating. He almost, Gaethje looked dead to rights. Your boy P Money. Big John almost stopped it. I had a second parlay that was this close to cashing on account of it. Thank goodness, you know, that big underdog parlay. You know, but no, the referees, and again, I'm one that will never be pissed off when the referee errs on the side of fighter safety.
Much rather an early stoppage than a late stoppage.
Exactly. 100%. And, you know, now for myself who's saying, well, then why are you fucking pissed off about the stoppage with Michael Chiesa? Well, that's because...
Doesn't mean an early stoppage is good, yeah.
For myself, I feel that the danger of being put to sleep via a submission is less than the concussive force of a late TKO stoppage due to repeated blows. Again, I've said it many times before, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a scientist, but that is just my unprofessional assessment. But be that as it may, this was just a fight where, you know, the ref... My goodness, he let the debuting Justin Gaethje, he gave him every last chance in this fight, like it was a title fight. I mean, hey, in the headlining spot in your UFC debut, being a champion that defended his belt 10 times, or he defended his belt many, many, many times in World Series of Fighting. Undefeated prospect, 17-0 coming into this organization, fighting the number 5 UFC lightweight. He was given every last fucking chance to pull it out, and wow, somehow he did. They were both from the opening second, as you mentioned, Jake, round of the year, absolutely, right out the gate for 2017.
Both throwing, what a crazy pace.
Throwing and connecting, yeah. Like hard.
Just, I mean, over the course of that round, each guy landed a double-digit number of clean, stiff hits to the face that could have put out anyone. I mean, you have Gaethje landing these monster shots, and I think was winning the round up until maybe a minute before, which I really don't know how I would have scored that first round looking back. I guess you give the first round to Johnson. Because, yeah, both were landing shots the first 3 or 4 minutes of the round. Gaethje probably edging Johnson out, but then it was Johnson who, in the last minute, took over and was landing. Combos hurt him bad. And then the second round starts, and Gaethje, what ended it was you actually heard his corner after the first round calling for body shots, and it was Gaethje who got rocked again in the second round. I called it. His hands were down. I'm like, he's about to get tagged again. Justin gets tagged again, but ends up landing a knee to the body that just absolutely emptied Michael Johnson's gas tank and basically left him unable to stand. I mean, he had also landed a litany of leg kicks, was for sure landing more leg kicks than Johnson, and Johnson was left just on the weakest of legs, kept falling down. Big John would stop it, stand him up. You could tell he was barely standing. Gaethje ends up finishing the fight, and famously, or what's not yet famous, but might go down as famous, tries to crawl up on the cage, not 2, but 3 times, fails the first 2 times. And
epic
fail the first time. Yeah, epic fail. He's falling on his ass. And I'm watching
this. Almost knocks himself out on the cage, on the octagon, really.
Like, I'm watching this as someone who's torn his ACL, who's broken his ankle. I see how weak and tired Gaethje is. He's climbing up to the top of this 6-foot fence to do a backflip off him. and I'm like, he's about to break something. Oh no! But he stuck it. Justin Gaethje, like I said, a star is born, dude. He not only has the talent, and you know, everyone thought, including me, that Michael Johnson was probably going to win this fight because Justin would step out swinging, brawling, and Johnson was more technical than Gaethje. But it was Justin Gaethje taking a ton of damage, getting the TKO, beating number 5 Michael Johnson. I don't care who Gaethje fights next, whether it's Ferguson, Khabib, as Joey Diaz would say, anyone. I'm just excited because Justin Gaethje put a stamp on his UFC debut tonight, 18-0. I can't wait to see what's next for this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my goodness. You know, I had seen some of his fights in World Series of Fighting. His first couple of fights, I didn't follow World Series of Fighting that much when it was around. I want to say now they're calling it Pro Fighters League or something like that.
Get out of tax trouble or some shit.
But, right. Hey, smart. Get a good accountant. But, yeah, the level of competition that he had faced, I mean, his... One of his bigger fights were, you know, versus Melvin Gallard, who had a while since washed out of UFC. And I want to say even Bellator. I'm trying to recall. Actually, I don't know if Melvin Gallard did fight in Bellator. But, again, the questionable level of competition, not the most notable people. But, again, stepped it right in, took on the number 5 guy, and... it was crazy. You know, Michael Johnson certainly, it looked like he was going to win as that first round played out. I mean, that the opening few minutes were just so crazy going back and forth. But towards the end of that round, Gaethje was certainly, it looked like he was just moments away from being finished. And Michael Johnson, you know, really was doing some great work. But Gaethje was saved by the bell. And, I mean, my goodness, I don't know. It was, the heart and the chin really persevered for Gaethje. I mean, and the technique, I mean, my goodness, it was just such a display. Who knows who he's going to get, next. But I mean, man, he's certainly, I mean, could be one fight away from a title shot. Really. I mean, he just took out the number 5 guy. And
with that charisma he showed off, that's going to do nothing but boost him.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. You know, there was some good hype leading up to this fight. You know, they had certainly done their part as far as the media and making the rounds went. And I know the UFC might have not been pleased with the level of some of the hyperbole that was being thrown around there. Oh, I'm going to take it. He said, I'm going to take this man's life. Oh, no, I wanted to kill him first. You know, they're going back and forth talking about how they want to kill each other. And you know what? I mean, goodness gracious. This is one of those fights. Great balls of fire. Sunday, check out your WWE Network. They really actually did look like they wanted to take each other's lives in this fight. And sad to say, but this is one of those fights where I'm like, damn, that probably is going to take a good year. And
right now, they're showing the clips actually on ESPN. Like,
yeah, I mean, this fight
actually. Watching the second round, and oh, just the power Gaethje throws with, gets rocked, fires back.
And, you know, and the power that Johnson,
cuts. Oh, I mean, those uppercuts. Johnson
hits Gaethje with this right uppercut that is just absolute full force, right, just on the tip of the jaw, just this powerful, just right cross uppercut kind of could not possibly put more torque on a human.
Look, there he goes, fail.
Oh, man.
Second try. Nope. Okay, no. Yeah, no. I'm going to do it now. Third try. Step up and stick the landing.
Oh, I thought Justin Gaethje was going to just bust his fibula out of his leg in that celebration. But, no, it was amazing. Certainly certainly going to be somebody high ranked. I mean, gave a good in-cage interview as well after that. And, yeah, certainly seems to be poised to be doing some big things.
Justin Gaethje. Pardon me for the coughing. I wish I had a little mute button here, but we are both talking on the same mic, so...
We don't have that luxury. We don't have that luxury.
Well, we are a little bit in. We're about 50 minutes in here, and we haven't even touched UFC 213, so I guess that's really the only thing left for us to break down. UFC 213, previewing this. Let's do like we usually do. Start with the prelims. your first fight, Trevin Giles versus James Bonovic. And again, pardon the burp, there have been a couple adult beverages consumed tonight. I really have no feeling. I have no idea who Trevin Giles is or James Bonovic is. I know people on all the other fights, but your first fight on the UFC Fight Pass prelims, your boy's going blind into Cody Stammen training with Michigan Top Team against Tarion Ware. Both of these guys are hot. Tarion Ware, a little more experienced. Cody Stammen, a little more the young upstart, the young go-hard there. Bantamweight Rob Font against Douglas Silva, De Andrade. Rob Font, a big favorite there for good reason, has looked sharp lately. A fun fight at welterweight between Jordan Meehan, who has more experience, taking on Bilal Muhammad. Both of these guys do like to strike, but stylistically, I feel like Meehan struggles a little bit when he is the one being pressured, and Bilal Muhammad does like to move forward, so I'm taking Muhammad here. Thiago Santos versus Gerald Meerschaert. Santos, Santos, if he comes out looking as good as he has, he could win the fight. He is a very accurate, moves around a lot. But I feel like Gerald Meerschaert, training up in a good camp there and training with a lot of wrestlers, if he can close the distance against Santos, I think he wins the fight. And I think that's what he's going to do in this fight to win. Brian Camozzi, a big underdog against Chad Laprise. Laprise probably wins, but I do like Camozzi kind of as a live dog there. And ending the prelims, Travis Brown and Alexei Olenek. This fight, I think, is Brown's. Alexei Olenek has shown that he is very dangerous on the ground. But Travis Brown, you know, through all of his faults, which he has shown a little bit of a weak chin recently. Not a weak chin, but he gets hit a lot. And, you know, you saw that on display against Fabricio Werdum. Olenek isn't going to tag him. He's going to go for the ground game. Travis Brown has too good takedown defense to really be susceptible to that. And I'm also going to throw Curtis Blaydes versus Daniel Omelchuk into that prelim group. Not for a lack of skill, but on second thought, yes, because of a lack of skill. Curtis Blaydes and Daniel Omelchuk, neither one are top 10 guys. This is only on the main card because Cerrone versus Lawler got scrapped. Sad face. I guess we did watch a Cody Garbrandt clip before this. It looks like Cody Garbrandt, not good until November. He went over to a doc in the U.S. Shit really didn't work well. He went to a doc in Germany. Shit went better. But he still has a long road. Apparently has 4 months before he's going to be ready to fight. So Garbrandt off the card. Cerrone Lawler off the card. Rescheduled for UFC 214. God damn it. I was really looking forward to seeing that fight. I've seen Cerrone fight a gang of times, but I guess I won't see him this weekend. What do you make of all of those prelims plus the Blaydes fight that I kind of tossed in there? Your thoughts, winners, style matchups, etc.?
Well, and I'm so glad that you clarified, Jake, because... as I was sitting there like, oh yeah, why is the third fight on the pay-per-view portion of the main card being lumped in as a preliminary card? Oh, because that's what it is, and as you had mentioned. Because
they're terrible.
Because Cerrone.
Curtis Blaydes is going to be the shit out of, like, not, like, terrible is a bad word, but neither one are going to be battling it out for the heavyweight title anytime soon. And Curtis Blaydes is, I believe, the biggest favorite. This is the most one-sided fight betting-wise on the card. So I guess the UFC is kind of hedging, hoping for a big Curtis Blaydes knockout, which very well could happen. He has an awesome name too, Curtis Blades.
Yeah, no, it's a solid
Mortal Kombat name.
Yeah, no, very Johnny Cage-esque kind of. Yeah, absolutely. No, and I mean, it's heavyweight, so of course, if any fight's going to get bumped up, it's going to be heavyweight. I mean, kind of surprised it's not Travis Brown, but, you know, hey, be that as it may. Yeah, as you mentioned, Trevin Giles versus James Bokhnovic, kicking off the fight pass portion of the prelims. I want to say they're both debuting. Cody Stamann versus Tarion Ware. Rob Font, yeah, versus Douglas Silva de Andrade. Some good bantamweight prospects there. Mia versus Bilal Muhammad. Great strike and scrap. Should be a solid one there. I'm liking the action. And I'm also, you know what, Jake? My underdog detector was going off with the Camozzi versus Laprise bout there. Laprise does have some solid W's on his record there. But, you know, those Camozzi boys, they got heart. Very interested to see what Brian's going to do tomorrow on that prelim, the Fox Sports 1 portion. And then, yeah, Travis Brown versus Alexei Oleinik. Man, I feel like that is just a tough fight for Alexei. Stylistically, I mean, Travis Brown enjoys such a great height and reach. Has good takedown defense. Those elbows, the takedown defense elbows that he's knocked multiple people out with. He's certainly got a lot of weapons. And Alexei Oleinik, I don't know if it's just the size discrepancy, but I'm just really not seeing a whole lot of ways that
Travis Brown is going to dispatch of him like a teenager who put their fingerprints on Ronda Rousey's judo medal.
Oh yeah, well no, but if that happened, he would be the person.
How fake a story was that? That rings of John Jones stopping a purse snatcher before he beat Shogun. So fake. Oh, we have terrible public rep, so let's make up a story about us, and we could have beaten these kids up, but instead we did the right thing and we called the guy. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, none of that happened.
You're bombs. Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. But that really did I don't even like talking about it. I was telling Jake yesterday, I don't even like hearing it. I don't watch the interviews mostly. Terrible. But certainly, I mean, this is going to be a solid set of prelims here. I really feel like it'll reflect kind of like today's prelims did with the Tough 25 finale. I mean, even if we don't get some finishes here, good stylistic matchups, definitely some fools will be getting hurt very badly.
Yeah, and I guess that brings us to that main card of UFC 213, and we'll start off with Anthony Pettis versus Jim Miller, which a lot of people, I think, for the right reasons, are saying this is a fight that they're the most pumped for, you know. And neither guy really, you know, it doesn't look like either dude is exactly equipped to be scrapping it out for the UFC title. Pettis obviously was the former champ, slipped up a little bit, took a ton of losses, took four of his last five fights as losses. Although you look at the fights, he lost to Rafael Dos Anjos, which was a title fight. Eddie Alvarez, who later became champion, and that was a split decision. Edson Barboza, which I think just stylistically was a really bad fight for Pettis. Beat Charles Oliveira via guillotine, and then lost to Max Holloway, who is the current champion at 145. So, as far as, like this might be the, like, as far as guys who lose four or five fights, this is, like, the least damning. Because you look at the fights and you're like, wow, they're all against killers. That said, you look at Jim Miller, he kind of was on a downslide there, losing four or five. Albeit against much lesser opponents, Benny Alderush, Michael Chiesa, and Diego Sanchez, before going on a three-fight winning streak, and most recently losing to Dustin Poirier by majority decision. I think stylistically, this has the possibility of being a bad fight for Anthony Pettis. because Jim Miller is that guy who just continues and almost seems to get like more and more durable as his career has gone on. Just walks forward, just marches, and is a great fighter. That said, I think Pettis is the better martial artist here, and unless he goes into it with a bad game plan, which is possible because he has done that on multiple occasions, he steps into the octagon and just seemingly has been told to play his own game, which I'll say a million times is not smart. You need a game plan for your opponent. If you're fighting a striker, you need to have a plan ready for that, a grappler. The same Pettis, if he goes into this camp equipped, which I think he will be, still training with Rufus Sport and all them, I think this is Pettis' fight to lose. Is Miller a live dog? Yes. But I think this will be an exciting fight. And, you know, Miller has power. He, you know, finished Takanori Gomi a year ago at International Fight Week in, I think, 2 minutes. But, like I said, Pettis is no Takanori Gomi. I think Showtime gets the win here. What do you think?
Oh, well, you know what? This is one I've really been going back and forth on.
Yeah, me too.
My goodness. I could see this going either way. I mean, I think a lot of it depends on... Yeah! A lot of it depends, for me, on this fight, which Pettis shows up.
Yeah.
Pettis has looked at times like a guy who can literally defeat anybody at 145, 155... he has pulled off such feats in the octagon since the WEC days. You know, I mean, the fucking Showtime kick, my God, in the very last fight the WEC ever had. And the things he's done inside, he has done spectacular things. Yeah, very last round, the closing seconds. He's done spectacular things in the UFC as well. I always refer everybody to Anthony Pettis versus Donald Cerrone, and to go back and watch that fight. If you need to watch that thing in slow-mo, watch some of the shit he does in that fight. Mm-hmm. Like, he pulls some Showtime kick type shit off in that, and just in a lot of his fights with a lot of his competition. I mean, subbing people out like they're bums when they, you know,
bum
look
status.
Bum status, like when they look to be, you know, or when they definitively are some of the best fighters in their weight classes. But for some reason, you know, Anthony Pettis, we find him at a point now where he is 1-4 in his last five, has the loss to Max Holloway, couldn't even make weight, successfully made weight for his featherweight debut, if I'm not mistaken, and then could not make weight for the interim title fight, when he then gets smoked by Max Holloway. And so, you know, just very interesting series of events to see what's happened now. Apparently this fight is going, he's going back to the lightweight division. Now Jim Miller, again, he's, as Jake, you brought up, has had a similar
A-10 Warthog. I guess he's the A-10 now.
He's the A-10 for the first time.
He should have just gone by Warthog. Come on.
No, seriously, that would have been way cooler.
Warthog would be a dope name. The Warthog. Right.
But
no one's ever been the Warthog before. Come on,
Miller. Well, no one's ever been the A-10 either.
I thought it was like, yo, would he go to school in the Atlantic 10 conference or something?
Yeah, I was struggling for that as well. But he had gone through a similar rough stretch, had that 1-4 stretch. It probably could have been 5-5 in that, or 0-5 in that stretch, really. Close one with Danny Castillo, at least to my recollection. But he's 3-1 in his last four, although really that's a nice way of saying he lost his last fight. Is coming off a loss to Dustin Poirier. And, man, I don't know. But Jim Miller, at one point, I want to say, had put together the 8-fight winning streak in the UFC. It was when there was that logjam between Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard. And there was the draw on Frankie Edgar, Gray Maynard 2. And, you know, that kind of held up the belt. We had all these competitors with all these great winning streaks. And Jim Miller was right there, right in the mix, and just, you know, just fell short. I mean, you can only win so many times in a row, really, in any circumstance, and he had put such a great winning streak together without the belt. But, yeah, you know, look to be on that decline, has turned it around. Is this going to be that point for Pettis? I don't know. Man, I could see anybody. I mean, Jim Miller has come out and submitted people out of nowhere. He's a fantastic black belt, and he does have a good, diverse skill set in his striking. He's a grinder. No one has more heart than Jim Miller, and some people have kind of questioned Pettis's heart. I would say if there's the intangible advantage, you could probably give that to Jim Miller. Him and his brother Dan Miller, man, those are some scrappy dudes.
Scrappy dude.
Tough fight to call right here. I'd say quote unquote smart money is on Anthony Pettis, but man, I don't know, the intangibles. My live dog sensor is going off with Jim Miller, but then again, that could just be because I love the dude. His work ethic seems like a good fighter.
Pettis should win, but Miller for sure is a live dog. Bringing us to Verdum Overeem, which I believe is the first MMA trilogy ever to be drawn out over three separate fight promotions, which is interesting.
Damn.
Verdum winning the first fight in Pride back in 2006. Overeem winning this, and that was by Kimura. Overeem winning the second fight
via Kimura.
Overeem winning the second fight via decision in that famous fight in Strikeforce in the heavyweight Grand Prix, where Verdum would fall back on his butt and beg Overeem to come grapple. Overeem did not. This is the trilogy fight, and both of them, man, they have looked great of recent. Since losing to Overeem in that Strikeforce fight, Fabricio Verdum, is 7-1 his last eight. The only loss, obviously, being the one where he lost his belt to Stipe Miocic at UFC 198. Since then, he's had one fight on the co-main event of UFC 203, where he defeated Travis Brown. Alistair Overeem himself, 5-1 his last six. Similarly, his only loss coming to Stipe Miocic. His loss at UFC 203 on the main card there. So both of these guys could arguably make their point as the number two heavyweight. And this is for sure a calling of the herd. I think the winner of this fight will likely get a title shot. And it's very interesting, man. I'm going back and forth on who I think is going to win. But the more I think about it, I think... you know, I think it's a matter of who is going to crumble. And I'm taking Verdum to crumble, Alistair Overeem to win the fight. I think he, a little younger maybe. I don't know what you do with the title, especially since he just fought Stipe. Maybe, you know, I mean, he did rally back and defeat Mark Hunt via KO earlier this year in March. Heavyweight position, or the position of where he lies in the heavyweight division, is interesting. But I think I'm taking the Ream here. Who you got, Pete Money?
Boy, this is a difficult one to call.
It is.
You know, I've professed a lot as of late that typically in rematches, I like to pick the person that won the first time. And that has done pretty well for myself as far as making my picks and the accuracy goes. This is a tough one because this is the rubber match.
Either guy has won, yeah.
Either guy has won. It could go either way. And these fights are spaced so far apart, too. First fight was in Pride.
In 06.
2006. Second fight, which was the one that Verdum... had won. Second fight, Strikeforce 2011, the one that Overeem had won. So,
kind of evenly stretched out every 5 or 6 years.
Yeah,
we get Overeem Verdum
every half a decade or so. You know, they run it back. So, you know, is I mean, and since their last fight, Verdum 7-1, Overeem 7-4, much more active. After beating Verdum, he came right over to the UFC and knocked Brock Lesnar the fuck out. Everybody was assuming he was going to come get that belt from Kane. Never happened like that. Overeem went on a skid, but since then he's on a 5-1 streak right now. You know, has that KO loss to Miocic being the only one in that streak, the only defeat. So him and Overeem have that in common. Dude, it's going to be such a tough one. Verdum really just has seemed to improve that striking more and more ever since. And you know what? It wasn't really too bad either during his during the second fight with Overeem. Really seemed to come along even more. Dang, I could see this going either way. I've got to go with Overeem. I mean, damn it, I'm going with the guy who won 6 years ago. He won more recently, you know, got that rematch. I think he's going to take the third one.
We will see there tomorrow night, UFC 213 from the T-Mobile Arena. Moving to the co-main event, talk about another banger, Yoel Romero and Robert Whittaker. We haven't seen Yoel Romero since he busted Chris Weidman's skull in half.
God damn.
And called up Michael Bisping. See you soon, boy. I love you, Mike. I love you. I love you. Not forget Jesus, Mike. Mike, I love you.
And no, that was not a sound clip. That was Jake Walters.
I think just being from possessed Florida, by I the can spirit. I kind of feel the Cuban vibes. I love you, Mike. Robert Whittaker looked fantastic, and I've been a Jacare mark for so long. What Robert Whittaker did to Jacare was incredible, and was something that Yoel Romero had 15 minutes to do, couldn't do. Finish Jacare. That said, Yoel Romero is a motherfucker. I don't like. You know enough about Yoel Romero. If you're listening to this podcast, and you don't know who Yoel Romero is, real quick, just look up a highlight reel and look at the devastation and look at just the crazy shit. Like, I really think this is the best middleweight in the world. Don't get it twisted. They're fighting tomorrow night for an interim title, but these are the two best middleweights in the world. Fuck Bisping, who got lucky against Luke Rockhold and then beat a 60-year-old. Fuck that, like, all he's done is got lucky against Luke Rockhold, beat some dude who was like 60, and then talked about fighting a welterweight George St. Pierre. Like, come on, so fucking weak. Whoever wins this fight is going to not just beat Michael Bisping, but likely murder him in the ring. I got Yoel here. I think it's as simple as that. I mean, I'm about to go take a leak here, and I'm not even trying to rush through my pick, but I just, man, as much as Robert Whittaker might have a little reach on him and is, I mean, obviously skilled, he has a full toolbox, whether it's jiu-jitsu, whether it's takedown offense and deep defense. I don't think Yoel, if he wants to, will have an easy time taking Whittaker down. Although I do think, I mean, just stylistically, look, I think Yoel Romero obviously has the grappling advantage. And standing up, Whittaker is dangerous. Romero is too. I don't know if I give either guy really a clear advantage. So I think, you know, Romero can choose and dictate the pace of the fight, and I think that will be key. I have Romero winning the fight and matching up against Michael Bisping and sending the count back to Transylvania or wherever the fuck he's from and just absolutely murdering Mike Bisping. P-Money?
D- damn, not just one fight prediction, but two fight predictions.
What out?
For one main event. Dang, you know, for myself, I mean, this fight is as close in my mind as the Vegas odds have it. Really, Robert Whittaker, since moving up to 185 pounds, I was skeptical of the move coming off of his knockout loss to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, but has shown an interesting case of moving up being the best choice. Man, he has just absolutely beat the dog piss out of everybody at 185 pounds since moving up. Has really shown diversified striking arsenal. You know, hands showing some good technical boxing, showing good kicks, showing very solid takedown defense as well. Robert Whittaker really just putting it together all the way around, looking absolutely fucking brick house shredded at 185 pounds as well. Just like Yoel Romero, I'm looking at these two guys at the weigh-ins like, I mean, Yoel Romero is constantly referred to by people I know, military veterans I talk to and speak to on the regular, that say Yoel Romero is one of the most terrifying fucking people that they have ever fucking witnessed. And, you know, Robert Whittaker is a brick shithouse right up there with Yoel Romero.
Dude was goose-stepping around the ring after he broke Chris Weidman's head open.
I mean, he was really... literally. He does some crazy feats and just the way he destroys people and breaks people's jaws and faces and generally. Yeah, it is a pretty scary thing. And Robert Whittaker has been doing a lot of the same. You know, Jake and I were discussing off air a little earlier today the common opponent that they have in Jacare Souza and the definitive manner in which Robert Whittaker was able to get that victory. And how Yoel Romero, a lot of people did not even win that fight.
I think we both agree that Jacare won that fight.
Yeah, pretty much. I've been a huge fan of Yoel Romero for some time though, so I wasn't too pissed off. Not that I'm not a huge fan of Jacare as well, and not that I don't think Jacare really got fucked out of a title chance for many years there, and you know, just luck of the draw, Whittaker came in, take him out. Jesus, after all this rambling, really,
no forget Jesus.
Styles make fights, no forget Jesus. And you know what, man, Yoel Romero ain't forgetting Jesus, and he ain't forgetting that savage wrestling that he's got. He is you know, the way we look at Khabib Nurmagomedov and the 155-pound weight class, or the way we just look at certain fighters with a certain credential of grappling or wrestling skill, and which is a legit thing. Once you reach a certain level, you are just definitively... I don't know that another person who hasn't been at that level can even get better than you. Just physically. It's a certain physical level that you have reached at that point. And Yoel has reached that. At that point, it's just one of those things. You're never, ever going to be able to catch up to him, because it's all he's been doing his entire life. And you can get really fucking good. You can get to the point where you can destroy just about anybody. But Yoel Romero just seems to be that dude. He was just born in the perfect environment. You know, his brother being an Olympian boxer, if my memory serves. So he's been doing boxing and wrestling for essentially probably his entire fucking life. And, you know, good luck catching up, I think. Robert Whittaker is just one of the toughest human beings. And I could see, if anybody could stop him at this point, I think Robert Whittaker could. He has shown...
Yeah, I really think these are the best two middleweights in the world.
No, they're...
This is for the real title, folks.
I mean, Jake, you may want to slow that roll. Michael Bisping, you know, like Baby said, you know, you got to put some respect on Michael Bisping's name.
Fuck Michael Bisping.
Put some respect on Michael Bisping's name, you know. When you speak on him, he's the champ. He's the champ.
Put respect to my name.
Reigning, defending, you know, when you say my name, you put some respect on it. You know, respect Michael Bisping. He knocked out Luke Rockhold in that rematch. Even though he got chumped in the first one, he chumped Rockhold in the second.
Lucky. Fluke.
You know, and even though Dan Henderson almost finished him again.
The man's 80.
In their rematch. And he almost knocked him out.
The man's 80.
And he left Bisping looking more busted up than he did after the end of that fight.
Dan Henderson is 81 years old.
And somehow, probably should have got that fight too. But, no, I don't know. But did not get the decision in that one. But be that as it may, both beasts. Styles make fights. At the end of my rambling, Yoel Romero, Olympian wrestler, one of the best, pure beast, can't catch up. Man, Robert Whittaker could knock him. He could knock him. I remember way back when Yoel Romero did get knocked, fighting at 205, but I don't think that's going to happen. Romero could fucking grab Robert Whittaker and throw him into the 15th row. He's just such a brick shit house. I think he's taking it, be it decision, be it stoppage. I've got the soldier.
The soldier of God, yeah, he is a scary motherfucker when he's goose-stepping around and saluting God and whatnot. I guess that brings us to our final topic. Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko for the women's bantamweight title. They fought once before. Nunes winning via decision. Nunes, it was a 3-round fight, non-title fight. Nunes winning round 1 and 2. Shevchenko rallied, won the 3rd round. If it would have been a 5-round title fight, it would have been very interesting. It looked like Shevchenko was really starting to general the shit out of the fight. All of a sudden, Nunez really looked more in danger than she has in her entire career. Because since winning the belt against Miesha Tate and her fight against Ronda, which are her only 2 fights since that win against Shevchenko, she's looked pretty dominant. She obviously made quick work of Ronda Rousey in 48 seconds back at UFC 207. Similarly, she defeated Miesha Tate in the 1st round. So her last real test was against Valentina Shevchenko. Shevchenko gets the rematch here. I'll set the table. I'll let you lead this one off, Pat. What do you make of the rematch? Amanda Nunes, the headliner at her 2nd consecutive international fight week. Really making a name for herself, it seems like. And, the mainstream MMA fan might not be that interested in this fight. But I've really enjoyed seeing the women's bantamweight division thicken out, and you know, women like Amanda and Valentina making waves. I think they're both probably the best 2 fighters at 135 currently. So this is a true number 1 versus number 2, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I mean, this is going to be a great scrap, I think. You know, I actually kind of wanted to counter with a question to you first, Jake.
Yeah.
Who got their ass beat worse by Amanda Nunes? Was it Miesha Tate or was it Ronda Rousey? Because they both got absolutely trucked in the 1st round. But who got it worse?
I would say just by Ronda's lack of even being able to hang in there longer than 38 seconds or 48 seconds. Miesha Tate, I think, was dropped and subbed out. Rousey, yeah. I mean, we're 20 seconds into the fight between Rousey and Nunes was pushing forward, demolishing.
Yeah, very true, very true. Both, you know, very hard to quantify there, very hard. Be that as it may, I mean, goodness. I don't know, as I look at this fight, I think it's just going to be fireworks. And as you mentioned, these two ladies, just the way the thing's 135-pound weight class has gone down, really they are the definitive 1 and 2 right now. pardon me. And it really did look like Valentina was definitively taking things over in the 3rd round of their fight.
Yeah.
When they had first fought. And that was 15 months ago. 16 months ago at most. Can Nunes...
Well, UFC 196, it was the last time. Wow, it's fun. That's funny. I guess that must have been on the main card of UFC 196. that was the last time your boy was in Vegas, and he was here with old P Money.
That's right.
And that was the lead off to the main card, Nunes Shevchenko. Well, it's funny. You had Holm defeating Tate on the same card. Tate defeating Holm via that fifth round submission. Nunes would eventually sweep in, take the title from Tate. Of course, the main event being Nate Diaz defeating Conor McGregor, Conor's only loss since losing to Joseph Duffy back in the day in Ireland. Yeah, that was a wild card. It's funny. The last time they fought was UFC 196, and they are back at UFC 213. We are back at UFC 213.
Damn.
Damn. And, man, how do you see this fight going?
Well, you know what?
It's hard to forecast, because both had their moments.
Both had their moments.
And both have evolved since.
Yeah, both certainly continue to look good. I mean, it's hard to say that Amanda Nunes hasn't looked even better since that fight. I mean, just, again, shit-housing Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey in the first round very quickly. Shevchenko defeated Holly Holm, a very sound unanimous decision, and the widely regarded unanimous number one contender, Juliana Pena, by second round stoppage. She had she was overcoming some adversity there in that fight, and ended up winning with the armbar, showing some great wrinkles to her game. Shevchenko, really known for her striking, but came through with the grappling, and that will serve her very well against Amanda Nunes. That will allow her to let the hands go even more so. Shevchenko, as we've seen, has been training with Rose Namajunas, rolling with her as of late, and really looks to have increased her game. I mean, damn, Nunes, though, just continues to look scary everywhere. She's scary on the ground, and she just destroys the ladies on her feet. However, I think just this one's a five-rounder. The gas being a factor, I think that's a hard thing. As time goes on, I don't think people's cardio really, you know, again, talking about getting better, how much better is your cardio going to be a year from now?
Shevchenko looked good in the fourth and fifth rounds against Holly Holm.
She kept a solid pace for 25 minutes. We have not seen Amanda Nunes in those deep waters. So I think I'm going with Shevchenko in this. Just plus, combined with her kickboxing and her striking arts, her striking abilities and her background and credentials. Yes, Nunes is scary and absolutely destroys women like Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey, who have zero striking to begin with. But Shevchenko, world-class, and I think really with her grappling training, I mean, Nunes is terrifying. She probably beat the piss out of me.
And me.
But I think Shevchenko has evolved just enough. I think the cardio will be a little bit better. And I think she's going to come out, and I think she's going to earn the unanimous decision in this one.
And I wish I disagreed, but I'm feeling the same way, man. I feel like Shevchenko really really has the tools. You know, it's going to be a matter of can she withstand that first round. And if she can get through the first round, you know, if I hear that the fight end, like, if I knew ahead of time that the fight would end in the first round, then I would probably forecast, I think this is Amanda Nunes' fight to win. But the later it goes, the more I favor Shevchenko. And, man, she has shown such versatility in her fights, outstriking Holly Holm, out-grappling Juliana Pena. I think she's evolved a lot where, you know, not to take anything away from Amanda, because she's, you know, finished Miesha Tate and Ronda Rousey, maybe the most famous two women's MMA fighters of all time, back-to-back in the first round. I think Shevchenko, she's just got wicked striking and Muay Thai, and I think she carries that over. I think she's able to withstand Nunez's onslaught. And I have Shevchenko winning a decision or a late stoppage. And I believe that is all we got live here from the MGM Grand. Pat, you got anything else for the people?
Man, well, you know what, Jake?
I'm hungry. Let's get some food, don't
we? Yeah, we're trying to get our grub on. Truth being told, we are going to be up in that T-Mobile Arena tomorrow for UFC 213.
So, tweet us. Check it out.
Holler.
Section 221. Come find us. Sweet Pappy Jones, the MMA podcast, the T-Mobile Arena. We might grab a little lunch at the Hooters across the street. Hit us up for a cold beer if you feel like it. If you're listening.
That's right.
If you're in Vegas. And if you are a stalker and want to kill us, please don't come to the Hooters and don't kill us.
Yeah, maybe save that.
Maybe save killing us for another date. But I believe that's all I got, Pat.
Jake, no, that's about it. You know, I think we made it through this one just a little less intoxicated than the last time we were here. Oh, yeah, no, definitely. Just a little more maybe articulate than the last one. Again, maybe not. I think retrospect will really play that out. But God bless all the listeners. God bless you, Jake. Pleasure teaming up doing the MMA podcast, episode 207, here live in Vegas with you. And can't wait to do up UFC 213 tomorrow.
Woo! We playing so hard, you might think we ball from Montreal. Keeping our noses at the grindstone. Stay healthy. Stay safe. Don't text and drive. We love the shit out of you. We'll see you. Maybe next week we will be back to doing Pat from Cali, Jake on the road / Florida, wherever I am, breakdown this card we previewed tonight. Hopefully you're listening on a bright Saturday afternoon, wherever you are, hot as balls in Vegas. But if you are in Vegas, get the cold brew with us. Enough talking. We'll see you next week. Until then, we go.